Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
The Media Project is your opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, and when we're on our best game, some insight into
when
the
was
media
that?
Issues of the week. That was about 1988. Yes, absolutely.
I remember that year.
Yeah, very good. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. That guy is Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus at the Kingston Daily Freeman in the Hudson Valley. How are you there?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to be back.
Absolutely wonderful to see you back here from California travels and so on. Kaylin Brown is here, professor at the College of St. Rose. What's going on?
Happy World Press Freedom Day.
World Press Freedom Day as we speak. That is a wonderful thing. We will actually have to get to that point. It's also National Day of Prayer. Let's pray for the press. And Dr. Alan Shartok is over there at the end of the table. Sir?
Thank you for saying hello.
Hello. It's wonderful to see you. Alan, it's a fine and charming tie you've got on there. It practically knocks my eyes out all the way across the studio here.
Guess what? I bought it in Graceland.
Really, in Graceland?
Several years ago, and Roselle reminded me, I hate to say this over the airways, that I paid $200 for it.
Whoa. Wow.
Listeners, if you could see this tie, you would question the $200 invested in it.
I bought it from a man named Lansky, who sold Elvis all his clothes.
Wow. And I think that's more than Monica Lewinsky paid for Bill Clinton's tie, isn't it?
Anyway,
but we digress into American history. Wow. Well, anyway, I'm sure it's worth every cent. So, speaking of Washington, just a moment of recognition here. The Washington Post has, as you know, its fact checker run by a fine reporter named Glenn Kessler, who says that Trump has topped 10,000 false or misleading statements. Now, the question for this program is, what should we in the media who care about truth-telling do? Has it almost become just par for the course that the president lies, and so we almost lose any effectiveness by even writing about this or even discussing it?
Well, I think that the Washington Post has done a terrific job, which we're all grateful for keeping track of the lies, because individual lies stop to be, you're quite right, Rex, is that important, because everybody expects it of the guy now. But when you say he's told 10,000 lies and it's the job of the press, of a press agency, to keep track of that, I think we're all indebted to them.
Absolutely.
And I think we've already seen the changes in the press, certainly in the print press, in that whereas at one time or historically there was a reluctance to use the word lie, now there is no such reluctance. If the president lies, it is reported as a lie, and the correct version of that lie is then usually right there in the story. So that may be something we can thank Trump for, because we never used to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, CNN and MSNBC are great at showing you the actual lie that he's telling and then contrasting it with the next thing that he said. So that's terrific. It's much more impressive than if you just read about it in a newspaper.
Well, I disagree with that.
Well, I was going to say it extended to not just Trump, but the Barr hearing the other day before the Senate. MSNBC, I don't know about the others, interrupted the live testimony to point out that something that either Lindsey Graham or Barr himself had said was not true. So yeah. They fact-checked right at the real time.
I can't wait for Professor Brown to tell us why she disagreed with what I said.
Well, I will always prefer to receive my news via a newspaper. Doesn't mean the paper. It means online, however I get it. But I find that newspapers are the most credible. Either way, just because they have more time and more resources, while the resources are shrinking, to devote to in-depth reporting, where TV doesn't have that sort of attention to be paid. They just don't have that much time on TV to provide the depth that newspapers provide. But what I would say about the Post keeping track of lies and the other media who are also paying attention to the lies, what ultimately is happening is they are fulfilling their service mission. The mission of the news is to help the public make decisions. So in that, they've fulfilled their mission.
I agree with you, but it is difficult because it is as though the phrase fake news is now more than anything like lock her up. It's one of those phrases that binds the Trump faithful. And so the more we do, as you're advising, which I think is true, to point out lies and misstatements, it still leads people to say, well, of course, the Washington Post says Trump lies 10,000 times because that's the liberal Washington media. That's the lying press. So it's a difficult thing because, and we've talked about this before in this program, as time goes by, we are increasingly being divided into what I would characterize as the truth tellers and the Trumpists, because the people who believe the president clearly are not paying attention to facts. I'm sorry. It's true. When he repeats same lies over and over again. So, you know, his one saying, he says, you know, mothers and doctors have the option to execute babies. You know, he talks about this, which is simply not true under any law anywhere.
Well, he amplified something that the Virginia governor, I believe it was, who was a doctor, said, but he took it a whole new place. But to your point, Rex, whether or not there is the truth tellers and the Trumpsters, the truth tellers, we need to do what we're doing. We need to keep pointing out the lies, whether people believe it or not. Well, you can't force people to believe you, but it's our obligation to report it.
Well, you know, there's another nuance to this. It seems to me that when Rex tells us quite correctly, you know, that this group of people don't care about his lying, I think they approve of his lying. Let's say 35%, which never gets off a dime. And they say, there he goes. That's great. That's what I think. In other words, some of them may well recognize the fact that he's lying and approve of it.
And well, they may very well behave the same way the president behaves, which is why they would support that sort of behavior.
Yeah.
Right? So right. Liars supporting liars.
Interestingly, since our last taping, the White House Correspondents Association dinner happened. And for the first time in recent years, there was no comedian providing the after dinner entertainment. Instead, it was the historian Ron Chernow, who's the biographer of Alexander Hamilton and Ulysses S. Grant. So he spoke to this assembled press corps, which had a lot fewer celebrities. For years, the Correspondents' Dinner has been a place where Hollywood comes as much as journalism does. But it was interesting, of course, that he said presidents always have adversarial relationships. George Washington had adversarial relationship with the media. John Adams actually even used laws to crack down on the media, and it was one of the things that led him to lose re-election in 1800. So this is not different. And the point that he wanted to make, I think the reason I'm bringing this up, is that he said, you know, this is just one chapter in American history that we will recover from this era. And I'm not so sure that we won't be permanently changed by this adversarial relationship.
Well, I wonder whether our friend Trump deserves credit, because although he is inadvertently forced the White House Press Association to go back to its roots and to just have a dinner without all of these celebrities, the thing had got entirely out of control.
Yeah.
I saw an interview with Sally Quinn, the famous Washington journalist, widow of Ben Bradley, who reminded us in terms of putting this in context that this all began when somebody from some news organization invited Fawn Hall. Do we remember the name?
Oh, my, yes. Oliver North's secretary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that was historically the beginning, and that wasn't all that long ago. So before all this happened, they had a dinner, much like they have dinners in other associations, but it was a fundraiser, and it was a night to honor the press, not to have the press themselves fawn, no pun intended, over all of the celebrities who showed up.
Well,
I
watched the whole thing, and I thought he was great.
I heard he was very good.
Did you hear his parting remark? He quoted Mark Twain at the end, who said, as we head into the election season, I leave you with one last gem from Twain. Politicians in diapers must be changed often, and for the same reason.
Well, no, I thought he was terrific. I agree with Ira. I think that the fact that this happened is probably to the good.
Anyway, if you want to share your thoughts here, we're happy to hear your views, and we will take advantage of that. media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org is how you get to us. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Kaylin Brown, and Rex Smith. So Kaylin is an educator here. She teaches young journalists, college-age journalists, how to do journalism. But we've had Student Press Freedom Day also in the past few days. And that brought forward the notion about high school journalists, who are an especially embattled group, right?
Yes. A number of them were down at the state capitol on Tuesday to lobby on behalf of the Student Free Press Act, which would provide protections for high school journalism students so that there is no prior restraint on their work. And they gave speeches down at the capitol. This was a very big initiative out of the high schools. My students also went down on Tuesday. We went and visited with one of our state senator's offices, Senator Breslin, and Assemblywoman Pat Fahey's legislative assistant as well. We had student groups in both those offices also asking for further protections for college students, and that maybe an amendment could be added to that bill.
Now, who are they seeking protection from?
The school administrators, specifically high school principals and school boards and superintendents. Great example that's really actually alive right now is out in Stockton, California, at Bear Creek High School, where the advisor to the student newspaper has gotten a warning demanding pre-publication review by the school board of a story about an 18-year-old Bear Creek High School student who is a sex worker. And the advisor is resisting this, thinking that the newspaper, which has a slogan, it's called The Voice, that is the name of the Bruin Voice, and their slogan is, "The Voice Shall Not Be Silenced." And she believes that the student journalists ought to have the right to publish stuff, even if it makes school administrators uncomfortable.
Now, you have a position, right, Rex?
Well, I do. I'm like, Kaylin, I support this. I think it's a great piece of legislation. I think that we use experiential learning in every other kind of activity. Why not in journalism? Why not teach students what the First Amendment is really all about by giving them experience exercising it? And I don't think that school administrators should be so sensitive that if there are rat droppings in the cafeteria and the students write about it, they shouldn't be able to squelch the story.
Okay, so that's a good example of why you don't want to have this kind of thing happening. On the other hand, what if you get somebody, and it's happened, of course it has happened, irresponsible, and they start to take pictures of Great Danes defecating on the front page, on the front of a newspaper somewhere. You know, I mean, I know that's the case.
Or Great Danes specifically, or any other kind of dog?
Any other kind of dog. And also, it doesn't stop there. I mean, what about an anti-Semitic newspaper or editor who starts saying things about Jews or about Muslims? Do not the people who are in charge of the educational establishment who want their kids to be learning, and I'm not arguing for this, I'm just trying to give you the other side, isn't there an argument to be made that while you're in high school, for example, or maybe even college, becomes much more
difficult? Well, and I would piggyback on that, and I also am in favor of it. I'm a big advocate of school newspapers. That's the way I got my start. That said, who is the publisher of the student newspaper? Is it not the school board or its representatives? In the real world, in your newspaper, your publisher has the right and indeed the duty to take something and say, no, you can't print it if he or she decides it shouldn't be printed. So is that not the same with a school administrator?
That's true. There are, in this bill that is before the state legislature, something similar about the way it's been adopted in something like 14 states, but there are exemptions. And so let me tell you what those exemptions are that are not protected by the Student Press Freedom Bill. That is expression that is libelous, slanderous, or obscene. I don't know if a Great Dane defecating fits that, but maybe. Expression that constitutes, or maybe even a poodle. Expression that constitutes an unwarranted invasion of privacy. Expression that violates federal or state law. Or expression, get this, that incites students to commit an unlawful act, to violate the policies of the educational institution, or to materially and substantially disrupt the orderly operation of the educational institution. So therefore, if a student newspaper, for example, and I think this would be open to interpretation. It's really interesting. An administrator would be violating the law by clamping down on aggressive reporting, but not by clamping down, say, on an editorial that urges students to beat up people based on their religious affiliation, that kind of thing.
And who advises, or who, if a student does in fact do something that's libelous? I mean, there are professional journalists who have to go to lawyers sometimes to say, is this libelous or is this not? Do those students have that kind of resource available? How do we prevent them from printing something libelous if they don't have the resources to back them up?
So many schools have school newspaper advisors. At the College of St. Rose, I advise our student newspaper, The Chronicle, for more than a decade now. And if there is a story the student has produced or students have produced that is something they are concerned about because it may have controversial content, they will usually run it by me.
And do you have to run it by the college administration? I absolutely do not.
I have never been asked to run a story by the college administration. We have, however, had pro bono attorneys look at some of our work and work on behalf of the Chronicle, both from the Student Press Law Center, which is a national organization. And also Rob Heverly at Albany Law School has done pro bono work for us as a media expert in law.
Mm-hmm. They're basically saying that there shouldn't be prior restraint by school administrators except for those areas of exemption. And those are pretty broad categories.
And I was going to say, you could drive a truck through some of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing that you have to remember is that some places are far more likely to have school board members than others who are going to get in your way.
True.
I mean, you know, maybe there's a difference between the way in which the Scarsdale School Board would perceive press freedom or the, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama group might.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know very
but that's
little.
Welcome to the real world, because it could be, in fact, the same kind of analogy could be made to professional newspaper companies. There are some, maybe most, that would say, hands off, it's up to our local people. And then there are others that say, you know, run this stuff by us. We don't want to run this kind of stuff in our newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, as objectionable as that might be to those of us who edit and write, do they not have the right to do that because they're writing the checks?
Well, I've discussed this before, but when my wife started the first Holocaust curriculum that every high school student had to have at Monument Mountain in Great Barrington, she got a deputation of people who were claiming, among other things, that it was anti-German.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there will always be people who want to check in on this stuff.
Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. concerning this school in Stockton, California, the superintendent's primary problem with publishing this story about a student who's 18 and a sex worker is that it would be a violation of the student's privacy.
Mm.
The student has said out loud, my name can be attached to this. Her name has since been subsequently been published, even though this story is not scheduled for publication itself in the school newspaper until next week, so it'll be the week this production is broadcast. So is there a privacy issue? The girl has said, I'm of a legal age. I have said that they can use my name. And now she's actually spoken with the Associated Press. So her name is out. There's no privacy issue. The privacy is gone now. She has identified herself as a sex worker. So
now the school administrator there says, you know, the First Amendment protects me. The advisor to the newspaper says the First Amendment protects me. And it really is an interesting question for students as well. Do American citizens age into their First Amendment rights? Or are we born this way? You know, do we have First Amendment rights at birth, or do we only get them at a certain age? I think that's a tough legal question, isn't it? Maybe some lawyer will write in and explain this to us.
I suspect that it's not as tough as you think. I have a feeling when you're in a high school or a place that is run by a school board, they are basically in loco parenti there. And when you get into college, then I think it gets a lot more iffy.
Interesting. By the way, an ancillary issue here that we ought to just talk about, because it's kind of sitting out there. I'm the current president of the New York News Publishers Association. Ira has previously had this job. The only reason that I'm the president of the News Publishers Association is because my boss, who's a publisher, said he was too busy. Would I mind taking his place on the board? And then, you know what happens when you go on a board? You
say, we got a sucker here.
Oh, boy. So our president, actually, Diane Kennedy, in effect, lobbies that we don't make campaign contributions. Diane has spoken in support of this bill, actually appears in legislators' offices in support of it, and asked me to come down and be there on behalf of the legislation, which I did. An odd situation for me. I've been to many press conferences at the state capitol because I used to cover that years ago. I've never been on the other side of the microphone. And it was a little uncomfortable, honestly, to be standing there speaking up with legislators, looking out at reporters.
But, Rexy, it does raise an interesting question. Look, we were not born yesterday. We do know that legislators pay particular attention and can pay particular attention to people of the press because they have the power of life and death over some of these people. So they're going to be very careful about, you know, listening to somebody who is both covering the news, which you do as an excellent editor of a paper, value-free, obviously as close to it as you can, and at the same time taking an opinion before them and saying, do this.
It's hard, though. I mean, I think it's a close call. We, our editorial page, published an editorial in support of this legislation, and I can buy that. It's just that, except for an issue like press freedom, I certainly wouldn't want to be an advocate on an issue. It just seems a little bit beyond what's appropriate for a journal, for a newspaper. That said, I did it because I think that this issue is important, and I just think it's a close call.
But as a member of the editorial board, you, in fact, are already making those kinds of stands every day of the week. I mean, theoretically, if you wrote an editorial tomorrow saying, you know, there ought to be a traffic light on this corner, it wouldn't be unreasonable for you to get up at a hearing and say the same thing that you said in the editorial. So there is a distinction there between that and those people who are your editors and managing editors who deal with the news.
And yet I want to, I have been at places where some of the top journalists in New York stand up and people treat them as if they're rock stars. We know that. And there's a difference. I think, Ira, it may be subtle to you, but not. An editorial, oh yeah, that's a bunch of words. But when Rex Smith, who is a star in this region, stands up and...
Only because I'm on this show, Alan. That's it's only because of you that...
Well, by the way, I agree with that. But there's nothing I can do about that. But you stand up and you are a star because everybody knows who you are. And I think you're going to get a certain kind of deference based on both appreciation and fear.
Hmm. It makes sense, though, that Rex would speak on behalf of this legislation. Rex and a number of other people walk into newsrooms every day and are simply enacting what this legislation is calling for. I mean, they are literally producing the news that journalists want to produce at the high school and college level, free of any constraints.
And by the way, the story that you cited about the sex worker in the school, I mean, that particularly given the fact, even if the person did not agree to have her name used, the story is true. I mean, there is no libel here. They're making, and right. So then the question is, why is the school objecting to that? Is it because they simply don't want the community to know that one of their students is a sex worker? Well, that's not their fault. You can do whatever you want on your own time. But the bottom line is, the story is accurate. So although I do believe there should be publisher interference in certain cases, this does not seem like one of them.
Well, I don't know. You know, Kaylin Brown quite frequently injects the name of her institution, College of St. Rose, into her remarks.
We are the school with the communications major that produces excellent students with credentials.
Yeah, you've said that again and again. But I wonder whether or not, you know, there aren't some colleges, some religious institutions, others, that would not be happy to, you know, say this is not good for our reputation, and therefore we don't want this to happen.
Well, that hasn't happened for the entire length of the time I've been at the College
of
St. Rose.
I'm not making an accusation. I'm just asking a question whether or not this is the kind of thing that would upset some of the people who run colleges. That's all.
Some may. Interesting. So anyway, if you have your views on this, or if you're an expert on the First Amendment, we would welcome that.
Or sex workers.
Or even Great Danes.
Isn't that the nickname of the Albany?
Yes, it is. The Albany, absolutely. Yeah. There might be something to this. We're media at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Kaylin Brown, and Rex Smith, and we welcome your thoughts. So here is an interesting thing. There was a piece published last week, a same piece published by Columbia Journalism Review, The Nation, and The Guardian. Here's the headline. The media are complacent. Thank you for the plural noun. The media are complacent while the world burns. And it was attacking the inadequate coverage of climate change. It's written by Mark Hertzgard and Kyle Pope, who is the editor-publisher of CJR. Here's what it says. Especially on television, where most Americans still get their news, the brutal demands of ratings and money work against adequate coverage of the biggest story of our time. And it cites, let me just give you one more statistic before we talk about this. A 2012 study by Media Matters, TV and print outlets across an 18-month period gave 40 times more coverage to the Kardashians than to ocean acidification. How about that?
If I never hear that last name again, it won't be too soon. It is the name that keeps coming up in my classrooms. And when we talk about climate change, sometimes there are students who would rather talk about that celebrity name rather than climate change.
Well, Professor, why? I mean, what is it about the Kardashians that attract the news media to cover them?
Well, I would like to say that I think the media are lazy when they spend all of their energy on celebrity news rather than on trying to help our globe. And in this case, talking and writing about the climate and how climate change may end our futures. It's about telling the story in a way that's compelling. Margaret Sullivan from The Washington Post recently talked about the fact that climate change coverage should easily be able to be told compellingly. And there's no reason for us to deliver dry stories that no one wants to read. So that's one of the claims, right? That the coverage is too dry. And if you have these sexy stories about movie stars, that somehow the public is going to be more engendered or more likely to pay attention to those.
Okay, so if you were the editor of, you know, any newspaper, and you knew that you wanted people to read your newspaper, wouldn't you go where you thought that the fish were biting?
It's an interesting question, Alan, because I do think there's some truth to what you're saying, though I don't want to give you too much credit.
You never do.
Now, that is, people sometimes overestimate the capacity of the media to change people's attention, to actually direct attention to things that we think they ought to pay attention to instead of what they do. And so while I agree that we need to be doing everything we can on what I agree is the most pressing issue of our time, it's really hard to get people to pay attention to something that they don't naturally want to pay attention
and
to.
And don't you, then, Rexy, and don't you think part of the issue is, yes, we know, many of us know how bad things are. We talk about it here on WAMC all the time.
Well, you do, but I think a lot of people do not.
No, I get it. But I think, you know, there's a lot of people who understand that when the water came up on Hurricane Sandy and flooded the subways, that we're really up against it now. Mm-hmm. My fear is that because we don't really know what to do about it, it doesn't become all that attractive a story because they say, oh, there they go again, telling us that this is bad and this is wrong, which it is. And by the way, one last thing, and that is, we all know this, it's not either or. It's not either the Kardashians or climate change. You can do both.
That's true. But it does also go back to the story we started this conversation with, which is the president claiming that it's all a farce, that climate change is not true. So that gets into his 10,000 lies theory. So
indeed,
it's all one big story, and we're here to talk about it.
The more we put climate change stories in front of audiences, the more they are likely to pay attention. So we must continue to produce stories that foreground climate change.
No
and
argument.
That is it. Last word goes to Kalen Brown. With Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok, and I'm Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
They all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kalen Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally...